First, testing has gotten a lot of attention during the COVID-19 pandemic as a tool to understand the scope of the disease. But another piece of the puzzle, contact tracing, is another big part of the effort to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. There are some misconceptions out there about what contact tracers do, and even conspiracy theories about the job have sprung up online. Our next guest joins us to tell us what it actually involves and what to expect if we get a call from a contact tracer. Dr. Crystal Watson is a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security and assistant professor of environmental health and engineering at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Watson, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Can you talk first about the importance of contact tracing as an element in getting the spread of COVID-19 under control?
Yeah, contact tracing really is our best tool in controlling the spread of this virus in an ongoing way. The other tool we have is these broad-based social distancing measures like the stay-at-home orders and the business restrictions that we've seen that have been in place. But once we lift those, we really need something to manage this on a case-by-case basis, and that is contact tracing. It helps us break chains of transmission and control the virus over time.
And contact tracing isn't new with COVID-19, right? Can you talk about some of the history?
Yeah, contact tracing is really a core tool of public health. It's been in use for decades and decades for different types of diseases like sexually transmitted infections, and even Ebola. It was used both in the U.S. and in West Africa to control Ebola there. And it's also been put to use in the latest Ebola outbreak in the DRC.
It seems like in some ways contact tracing is going to be both harder and more important because of the way this coronavirus is spreading, the thing where if I get it but I don't have symptoms yet, or ever, I guess, I can still spread this thing even though I don't look like a COVID-19 patient. Talk about how that affects contact tracing.
That's right. Contact tracing isn't a perfect tool. It's a tough job even at the best of times and with other diseases that we're more practiced with, but COVID-19, as you said, can spread asymptomatically. And so what's really important with contact tracing in this case is that once we get in touch with contacts with public health officials, then we ask those contacts to quarantine at home for 14 days if they had a significant contact with a case. And what that does is if they become infectious, and even if they don't have symptoms and they're at home and they're not spreading it to other people out in the community, that's the idea.
Let's talk about the nuts and bolts of what a contact tracer does. First of all, that conversation with the person who has a diagnosed positive case of COVID-19, what is that conversation like? What kind of things does the contact tracer want to find out?
Yeah, so first they want to check in on a person who's sick with COVID-19. Obviously, this disease looks different for different people, but people can be severely affected. So we want to make sure they're doing okay, that they have the resources they need to isolate at home, or if they need to have additional medical care, connect them with that care. So a lot of questions about how they're doing and what was the course of their illness, as well as where they think they were infected. Then they want to ask about what contacts that person may have had during the time they are infectious, and that's about 2 days before they developed symptoms, if they did get symptoms, up until the time they isolated at home. And so by understanding who they were in contact with, and we were interested in close contact, so that's people they were in direct contact with, that means within 6 feet of that other person for more than 15 minutes, then we can start contacting those other people who may have been infected.
Let's go to that follow-up conversation now. Somebody else had the disease. They say, yeah, I was hanging out with Rob for half an hour in that time range. What's that conversation going to look like from my end?
Yeah, so if you're Rob, a contact tracer will be in touch with you, say that you may have had a significant exposure to someone with COVID-19. They won't reveal who that person was. They'll keep that identity private. But then also tell that person that they should quarantine for 14 days in order to avoid exposing other people if they are infected. But also asking them if they have the resources to do that, asking if they need anything like food or medicines or other support, maybe for family members in the household. And even for some people, if they can't quarantine at home safely, say they have an elderly relative at home, then maybe even offering them a place like a hotel to safely quarantine during that time.
Talking to Dr. Crystal Watson from Johns Hopkins, looking at contact tracing during COVID-19. Dr. Watson, there's a lot of negative rumors going around about contact tracing. Some of it's pretty out there conspiracy theories, but I think some people are generally concerned and maybe confused about a few points. One is, if you're talking to me and I'm giving out the names of my friends and family members, am I putting them at risk of, being quarantined or getting some kind of negative treatment?
Yeah, so public health is very practiced at keeping this information private and acting responsibly with the information they get from contact tracing. But in order to protect one another, we do have to take these measures to try and prevent the spread. So if you do share names, it may be that that person will be asked to quarantine. But what public health won't do is share their information with other agencies of government or sell that information. They will keep it private, and it's for the use for epidemiology and for understanding the spread of the virus as well as keeping individuals safe.
Are there other misconceptions you run into when it comes to contact tracing that you want to, reassure people about?
Yeah, first of all, self-isolation and self-quarantine is entirely voluntary in this country, and with the exception of some very, very outside cases. So really, no one's forcing people to go into quarantine in a facility or anything like that. Really, we're just counting on individuals to act responsibly and to stay at home in order to protect themselves and others.
Let's talk about resources. Do we have enough contact tracers doing this job right now?
Unfortunately, we don't have enough contact tracers. Even in the locations that have put considerable resources into contact tracing, as we see case numbers rise, we're also going to need additional contact tracers, because you can imagine for every case, I think the average across the country is something like 8 to 10 contacts. So for every case, generating 8 to 10 contacts, that's a lot of work for one individual to follow up on. So there are other locations in the country that haven't put those same types of resources into developing the workforce. So I think on average across the country, we still have quite a ways to go to meet the need in this unfolding epidemic.
There's been talk about cuts in public health funding over the last years, decades, I guess. Is there a case to be made to have a better workforce in public health all the time, so we're not trying to spin it up really fast in a crisis like this?
Yeah, this initiative to scale up the contact tracing workforce is really unprecedented in this country, but we would be at a much better place if we had sufficiently resourced health departments at the state and local, tribal, and territorial level in this country. And so where we started out at the beginning of COVID-19 was we had about 2,200 contact tracers identified around the country. What we need is something on the order of 100,000 across the country. And so I do think there's a clear case for more dedicated funding annually, not just in emergencies.
Can you point towards success stories, maybe in other countries, on COVID-19 and contact tracing?
Yeah, there are some really great success stories in other countries, places like New Zealand, Singapore, South Korea, Taiwan, Iceland. They have all employed a number of public health measures, but one key one is contact tracing. And in many of those places, they've brought transmission of COVID-19 down to really low levels. And in some cases, in the case of New Zealand, for example, virtually eliminated the virus from their population. Now, they're in a very different situation than we are in this country right now. But I do think once we have epidemics somewhat under control in this country, we can greatly reduce transmission and make it much more safe to go back out in society and do our jobs and get back to a little bit more sense of normalcy.
That's a good point for our last minute or so. If we do better on testing plus contact tracing plus voluntary isolation, does that make it easier to do things like open schools back up?
Absolutely. I think there is a way to open schools safely, but the prerequisite for that really is we have to have control of a local epidemic. We can't have this large reservoir of uncontrolled spread. Otherwise, it will burn through schools. It will make teachers and staff members very sick. And so we need to be able to prevent the introduction into school settings. And that's how we do it, is we really get control through testing, case identification, contact tracing, and quarantine.
Dr. Watson, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Crystal Watson is Assistant Professor of Environmental Health and Engineering at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. She joined us to talk about how contact tracing works and why it's a big part of slowing the spread of COVID-19.